Welcome to Shattering Myths, a program devoted to the most important and to the fastest segment of the world's societies. To those of you who know that political, religious, media, military, and economic institutions worldwide, in your country and in every country around the world, are corrupt, that they are counterproductive, that they cannot be fixed. Our mission, therefore, is to look behind the headlines, to know who is working against our interest, to understand why they are doing so, because exposing and condemning errant and treacherous schemes isn't hateful. It's caring. In our concluding hour, we're going to use evidence and reason to explore the Torah, which means teaching, not law, because its empowering covenant provides the only reliable answer for you and for your family. Our phone number, if you'd like to participate in this discussion at any time over the next 3 hours, is 877-300-7645. I come to you this morning more humbled than usual. And it's because I listened this morning to a 30-minute interview by a German media outlet on conducted with Edward Snowden. I don't think I have ever been as impressed with an individual ever as I was with him. You know, I realize that I've got lots of flaws and that my diction, my knowledge, my past doesn't provide any qualifications that would impress anyone for this job. But yet I think I'm perhaps a little beyond average when it comes to discipline in the presentation of ideas and the use of words. I think I'm reasonably well informed. I think I'm reasonably rational. And yet, I don't hold a candle, nor does anyone I've ever heard, to Edward Snowden. Young man, 30 years old. Very little formal education. The interview that America doesn't want you to hear, an interview that tells you that Fox and CNN and NBC and CBS and ABC are as much a part of the problem as is the USA, the government itself, the NSA, the CIA, the DOD, is available on a website called Ben Swan, that's with two N's, BenSwann.com. You go to BenSwann.com, two N's. About 10 stories down on their homepage, you'll find this 30-minute interview. My hope is to get Aaron, our producer, to clip it. I'd like to provide an introduction to it. And on one of the days that upcoming here in about a month that I go on vacation, perhaps air it for you. But if you'd like a sneak preview, BenSwann.com. What Edward Snowden says, he was asked, you know, when did he come to realize that he needed to expose the grotesquely immoral behavior of the U.S. government and its spy agency, the NSA? His answer is one of my own. He said when he saw Intelligence Director James Clapper lie under oath to the U.S. Congress. I think James Clapper may be the most despicable man in the world today. I think his work is probably the most counterproductive. James Clapper told the Congress that the NSA is not collecting bulk information on Americans. He has subsequently admitted he lied. But that, under sworn oath to Congress, is perjury. If we allow, and that's what America is doing, a perjurer of this magnitude to keep his job and not be prosecuted, and yet we have a government that has indicted Edward Snowden on three felonies from an espionage act that dates to the 19th century, there is no resolution for our country. Its justice system has been gamed. It's no longer the rule of law. It has no pretense of being fair. There is no honor. Edward Snowden goes step by step through the process that he used to make the decision to share with the American media the abuse of its, of the American citizens by the American government. He is easily the most articulate, most disciplined, best informed, resolutely rational, and moral spokesperson for a important cause that I have ever heard. Now, it's sad that the majority of Americans hold a negative attitude towards Edward Snowden. Those of you who do, I would strongly encourage you to listen to that 30-minute interview. Now, I'm not going to say anything more about that interview at this time, other than we will present it as part of this program going forward. But if you notice, for those who listen frequently, a change in my tone this morning, it is because of how I was humbled by what this man has done for all of us and the sacrifice that he has undertaken to give us an extraordinarily valuable gift. One, unfortunately, that is being squandered on most Americans. And lastly, I want to leave you with, why is this interview extraordinarily professional in its scope? Extraordinarily important relative to the topic. From one of the most important men in the world. Why was it not featured in its entirety in news programs in every major network in this country? Now, I'm going to tell you, it was featured around the world. That interview played and generated enormous media coverage in Germany and other places throughout Europe. But the American government has obviously threatened mainstream news media outlets to silence them. It is much CTV. Vastly more important than the Super Bowl. Speaking of the Super Bowl, I do want to make one comment, because you will see it if you go to the Ben Swan, two N's, actually three N's because there's an N in Ben, so Ben, SWANN.com. If you go to the site, the first thing that you're going to see is at the top of the page, the idiot that stormed into a press conference post-Super Bowl, I think it was with Malcolm Smith, the most valuable player, the fellow drafted seven before Mr. Irrelevant in the seventh round of the NFL draft by Pete Carroll of the Seattle Seahawks from USC. And he is called a truther on the top of the site, and his rampage is listed at the top of the site. To their credit, when you click on more information, the position of Ben Swan, I think, is accurate. The position stated by the idiot that screamed into the microphone that 9/11 was an inside job perpetrated by the U.S. government is not. I know this is a conspiracy network, that GCN initially rose in prominence because its lead host is a conspiracy advocate. And while I do not know and do not really care what Alex Jones' position is on 9/11, I'm here to tell you, if you think that 9/11 was an inside job perpetrated by the U.S. government to bring those buildings down, you are a nincompoop. You have no credibility whatsoever. If you think it was perpetrated in concert with the Israeli Mossad and Israeli intelligence, then you're probably an anti-Semite in addition to being a nincompoop. Now, on the Ben Swan site, when you click on more information, because that idiot's rant is at the top of the page, which you will read, is that there's a congressman, I think his name is Jones, that has stated that the 28 pages, I believe that's the accurate number, that have been redacted from the 9/11 report, the 9/11 investigation, the U.S. government investigation, that were redacted by George W. Bush. The inference is that they contain information that's damaging to the credibility of the U.S. government, but that's not the case. Well, I have obviously don't have clearance, and I have not read those 28 pages. And while I agree with those in Congress, and it's only two that have been willing to stand up and say the U.S. public has a right to know what happened. Attack cost the United States billions of dollars and thousands of lives. And subsequently, we've invaded two countries and squandered $4 trillion. And if you count the suicides of those who have come back from those encounters, over 200,000 lives. So America has the right to know. The government doesn't want you to know. And what I suspect is on those redacted pages is the complicity of two governments, not the United States government. We were just stupid. Welcome back to Shattering Myths. I'm your host, Yada. I was going to go on to another story in the news, but I thought we might wallow here a while longer, since there seems to be a strong position held by many associated with this particular network that is counter to people's best interest. 9/11 occurred primarily because George Bush wanted to endear himself with his father's and his benefactors. Abrusco Oil, which was George Bush's failed oil venture, was funded by bin Laden interests in Saudi Arabia. The father made his consulting money by guiding through the Carlyle Group Saudi Arabian investments into American military companies. And so when Saddam Hussein invaded Kuwait and was probably headed to Saudi Arabia, Saddam Hussein was an ally of the United States. He was the primary enemy of Iran. He was a secular dictator. He was vehemently opposed to Islamic terrorism and to fundamentalist Muslims. He was the primary enemy in the world, most effective enemy in the world against Al-Qaeda. That when that happened, George Bush decided that he wanted to expend American resources to push Saddam Hussein out of Kuwait and therefore to keep him out of Saudi Arabia. Now, Kuwait and Saudi Arabia are the leading financiers of fundamentalist Islam. As a government, there's no government in the world more complicit in enabling fundamentalist Muslims to commit acts of terror, because they are the primary promoter of mosques and Qurans and imams teaching fundamentalist Islam, Salaf Islam. You can call it Wahhabism because of the tie between the Saud royal family and Wahhab, the religious Islamic fundamentalist. Salaf, which is the Islamic term that speaks of a fundamentalist Muslim, or just use the English word fundamentalist. And it would have been in America's best interest and the world's best interest had a secular dictator come to control the oil fields in Kuwait and Saudi Arabia, because it would have stopped the funding of Islamic terrorism. And without funding, Islamic terrorism cannot be perpetrated beyond the borders of Islamic countries. It would have been over. We would have won the war against Islamic terrorism without ever firing a shot had the United States simply allowed Saddam Hussein to retain Kuwait and then conquer Saudi Arabia. But unfortunately, because of selfish interest, Bush 1 decided that he could enable his own financial interests to use the American military to oust Saddam Hussein from Kuwait and keep him out of Saudi Arabia. It was a tragic mistake. But also keep in mind that at this time, and prior to this time, America had created Al-Qaeda and had rented the Taliban from Pakistan. And we had done so on Zbigniew Brzezinski's idiotic plan that you could, that America could give the Soviet Union a taste of what the Soviet Union gave America in Vietnam by wielding a proxy against the Soviet-backed government in Afghanistan, and that proxy was the Taliban and Al-Qaeda. And we provided them with billions of dollars of weapons and funds. So when Al-Qaeda and the Taliban, which were vital at that time, they were a genuine organization. The Taliban still is. Al-Qaeda was. Command and control. Militants on the foot. Well armed. All because of America. And the Carter and administration and Zbigniew Brzezinski. And this was followed to a large degree even by Ronald Reagan. And what happened was, because of the fact that the United States had enabled and abetted and partnered with these terrorists, Islamic terrorists, the Taliban and Al-Qaeda, when Saddam Hussein invaded Kuwait, Osama bin Laden and Mullah Omar went to the Saudi Arabian royal family and said, you know, we're perfectly equipped to resolve this problem. The arch enemy of Al-Qaeda and the Taliban was Saddam Hussein. He was a secularist. They despised him as he despised them. Welcome back to Shattering Myths. We're this morning doing something I didn't expect to be doing, but we are shattering the myths of the 9/11 truthers, of the conspiracy nutcases out there that prey on the public's ignorance by saying that 9/11 was an inside U.S. government job. But let's continue the story. So the United States creates Al-Qaeda and rents the Taliban from the Pakistan government through their ISI, through the prime minister, providing billions of dollars worth of weapons and arms over the course of two presidential administrations. And the Mujahideen, the fundamentalist Muslims who successfully bring down the Soviet-backed government at the cost of millions of lives, of course, but we don't count that in America. Just collateral damage, I suppose, they now are armed to the teeth. They are successful in bringing down the second most powerful military on earth, the Soviet military, in Afghanistan. And so their archenemy, the entity, the government and the individual, they despise more than anyone on earth, Saddam Hussein. Because Saddam Hussein is ruling as a dictator over a country where the population is about 90%+ Islamic. And he is a secularist, and he is completely and totally intolerant of fundamentalist Islamic terrorist organizations. They don't exist in his country. And so now he's invaded a financier of Sunni terrorist organizations, Kuwait, and about ready to invade the Islamic Holy Land of Saudi Arabia, where you have Mecca and Medina. And so Al-Qaeda decided that we can successfully rebuff Saddam Hussein. After all, if you can counter the Russian military, you can certainly beat the Iraqi military. Now, they went to the Saud royal family just as King George I did. But one of the interesting things about fundamentalist Muslims is they know not to trust one another. It's why they're killing one another by the thousands today in Syria. And so the Sauds unfortunately picked America to defend the primary income stream, the fuel flow for Islamic terrorism. Now, that is a, simply put, the wheels in motion for 9/11. And as it would transpire, a fellow that should be known to most Americans, his name is Khalid Sheikh Mohammed. His, and I think it was his sister, married Ramzi Youssef, but I'm really not up to speed with what the marriage relationship was, whether it was Ramzi Youssef's sister that married Khalid Sheikh Mohammed or the other way around, but they had a relationship. And Ramzi Youssef is the fellow who conceived the scheme that has us not be able to carry liquids aboard aircraft. He actually deployed that scheme in a flight across the Pacific Ocean. I think it was going to Tokyo, Japan. Killed one individual, I believe. He is the fellow that that came up with 9/11. Complete with sending Muslims to American flight schools to, so they could fly these commercial aircraft. The idea of where they would fly, the building specifically they would be flown into, including the Pentagon, the World Trade Center, and the U.S. Capitol. And that plane, that plan was all articulated, and he was very near bringing it to fruition. America FBI was given, and the CIA given access to that plan, because Ramzi Youssef's computer was seized in a raid because he attempted to assassinate the Pope when the Pope came to the Philippines, and that's where all of this took place. Well, Khalid Sheikh Mohammed was given a copy of that plan, Ramzi Youssef's plan. Now, Ramzi Youssef should be a name that's familiar to Americans, too. He is currently a guest of the U.S. government. He's the man that was convicted in the first bombing of the World Trade Center. He's the one when he was brought out of, after the trial of being convicted for the first bombing of the World Trade Center, when he planted one of those fertilizer bombs in the basement in the car park beneath the structure. And, you know, he was flown by helicopter to the prison after the trial, and he was, you know, blindfold taken off, and, you know, the FBI agent said, or the Justice Department official said, "See, they still stand, you failed." And he said, "Not for long." The mastermind of 9/11 was Ramzi Youssef. Now, he gave that plan to Khalid Sheikh Mohammed, and Khalid Sheikh Mohammed had a relationship with Osama bin Laden. And so he took that plan to Osama bin Laden, and it was put into place because of what King George I did relative to Saddam Hussein in Kuwait and Saudi Arabia, and the snub that was perpetrated against Osama bin Laden as a result of that action. It was sourced in terms of the personnel primarily out of the Al-Qaeda mosque in Hamburg, Germany. It appears that much of the funding came from the Pakistani ISI, though I can't prove that. There's a lot of evidence that suggests that. And therefore, the most likely intelligence that was redacted and excluded from the published report on 9/11, both from the Department of Defense and the one submitted to Congress, the 28 pages, I'm quite confident contain the connections between Saudi Arabia, contain the story that I have just shared with you, and with Pakistan. And so, fundamentalist Muslims, without knowing what they were going to do, were sent to America to train in those flight schools, even though America knew that this plan was going to take place and that flight schools were going to be used, and they hijacked planes, principally in Boston, and they flew them into the buildings and one into the ground. They're suicide bombers. They were screaming Allahu Akbar at the time. That's the truth. Now, if you want to believe that the U.S. government, decades before this occurred, saw to it that the steel girders used in the World Trade Centers would be covered in explosive material in anticipation of this day, go ahead. If you want to believe that the United States confiscated those commercial planes, that after they took off, that the United States government saw to it that those planes disappeared from the screens, they jury-rigged all of the air traffic control screens to making them think that those planes were still being flown into those buildings, and that they had those planes instead land at some undisclosed location that was unknown to the air traffic controllers, where they murdered all of the passengers and then buried the planes so they could no longer be seen, and then replaced those planes with the drones that they had specifically designed that they could fly into those buildings. Wow. You're special. Yeah, you cling to that. If you're going to watch a video online and you're not capable of processing, wait a minute, this has got to be the dumbest story I've ever heard in my life, good for you. Simultaneous with this program, you can listen to Alex Jones. I understand that he's still promoting that myth. Now, I've never listened to Alex Jones, so I can't tell you that's the case. And if he isn't promoting this myth, then I apologize. But I can tell you there's lots of websites that promote it. You know, if you don't understand who the enemy is, why they want us dead, and how the U.S. government has lied to us about who the enemy is and why they want us dead, and has done everything in the world counterproductive, then you have no hope of coming to the point where you're willing to embrace the truth about much of anything in your life. And until you are able to do that, until you're able to question the institutions that control so much of the world and to disassociate with them, you're not in a position to even consider what God has to say. So this is important. It's important for you to understand the destructive nature of religion. It's important that you understand the demonic nature of Islam. It's important that you understand that your government is working against your interests, but that your government is incapable of perpetrating a plan like this and keeping it secret. I mean, think for a moment. Edward Snowden, we began with him. Edward Snowden has millions of documents, some of the most important documents in the United States in terms of CIA intelligence investigation material. He was brilliant in that he decided that he would charge nothing for these things. He would not give them to a foreign government, that he would only give these documents to the media, to journalists, who then could review the documents and determine whether or not the public had a right to know. Do you think that if the Washington Post and the New York Times had been given a document by Edward Snowden that said that the U.S. government schemed this plan, that the public would not have a right to know and that they would not publish it? Do you think that Edward Snowden, who's trying to do his level best to tell you that your government is abusing you through unreasonable search and seizure, and that is abusing people around the world, do you think that if among the documents that he gained access to showed that the U.S. government deliberately perpetrated 9/11 so that it could go off to war, that it wouldn't be the first document that he would have released to the media? I mean, come on, folks. It is obvious what happened, and it's extraordinarily easy to understand the motivations of those 19 Muslims and those who backed them for flying planes into the World Trade Center, to the Pentagon, and one that flew into the ground that was intended for the U.S. Capitol. It isn't difficult. It takes a little bit of time. You've got to be open to the truth. You've got to want to know the truth. You have to prioritize evidence, and then you have to consider it rationally. It's not a lot to ask. Welcome back. I'd like to turn to the story that I had intended to lead off this program with. It's reported yesterday, Reuters. U.S. Secretary of State John Kerry is holding a gun to Israel's head in peace talks with the mythical people known as the Palestinians by warning that it could face international isolation if negotiations fail, a senior Israeli cabinet minister said on Sunday. The remarks by the Strategic Affairs Minister, Yuval Steinitz, who is close to Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu. Netanyahu means Yahweh's gift. Followed recent accusations by Israel's defense minister that Kerry was being messianic in his pursuit of a peace deal. It is an unfortunate choice of terms. The Messiah would never negotiate a peace deal. He said specifically, I did not come to bring peace, but instead division. Yahweh is extraordinarily blunt, and through his testimony, through his prophet Yeshaya Isaiah, where he has said that it is tragic that nations, particularly America, would seek to thin Israel at its waist at its most vital area through negotiation and through treaty, leaving Israel indefensible. The consequence to America is going to be grievous of doing this. So to associate this kind of stupidity with the Messiah was a very poor choice of words by Israel's defense minister. Now, it is true that the United States is holding a gun to Israel's head. At a Munich security forum on Saturday, Kerry touched a nerve in Israel by pointing to, quote, an increasing delegitimization campaign building up against Israel internationally, and, quote, talk of boycotts if Israel-Palestinian conflict does not end. And it's true. But not only is it true, he is a significant orchestrator of it. The European Union is resolutely anti-Semitic, anti-Israel. Resolutely. Overwhelmingly. As is the United States government. Those are the facts. The European Union has tried to abuse Israel every way possible. The United States is abusing Israel by supplying 25 times more military equipment to Israel's announced enemies than it does to Israel to defend itself. America was the country that forced Israel to give up Gaza, completing half of the prophecy of thinning Israel at the waist. If Israel is compelled to give up the West Bank and to return to 1967 lines, Israel becomes instantly indefensible. The nation will fall. World War III will begin. And the United States knows it. But it is reprehensible in terms of what it is doing. So, the United States is saying, yeah, we're not going to boycott Israel, but the rest of the world will. This is your last chance. You either capitulate and you make your country vulnerable so that it can no longer defend itself against a unified Islamic attack, or we will make you vulnerable through international sanctions. We will isolate Israel, delegitimize Israel from the rest of the world. Now, mind you, the hell that is being perpetrated by governments throughout that region, on their own people and on the world. And the world talks about delegitimizing and sanctioning the only sane government in the region. Kerry said, are we all going to be better with all of that? In other words, telling Israel, hey, if you don't accept my plan, if you don't capitulate, if you do not surrender the West Bank to the Muslims that are seeking to destroy you, then you will be delegitimized among nations. You will find boycotts imposed. Do you want to do that? It is a gun to their head. Now, we will continue with this story when Shattering Myths continues in its first hour tomorrow, because in our second hour today, we're going to return to the myths of Christianity.